less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation! Life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let's go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get dropped out. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well now, good afternoon, everybody. And welcome to the Guy James Show. Good to have you along with us this afternoon. We'll try and have an entertaining and informative program for you today here on the Head On Radio Network on the Guy James Show. It is good to be back in the chair. Good to have all of you along with us this afternoon. We appreciate your listenership more than you know. And I think I better turn down the couple dials here just a bit. There, that should be more like it. Yeah. Still filling with the new type setup we have here. I'm doing just about everything wrong that I can. I'm having one of those days. You ever one of those days where you got two left thumbs and two left feet or two right, you know, two the same? It just doesn't go right. Having one of those days today. Broke something earlier today that I and I'm just having a clumsy day. And the more I'm clumsy, the more I swear. I was up late last night trying to fix that phone problem we had yesterday. Normally we would call in the engineering department for that, but since the engineering department hasn't got paid for a long, 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 long time, they don't answer our calls anymore. We don't have an outside engineering company come in and do anything. We try and do it on our own, and sometimes it works out, and sometimes it doesn't. But I must admit, it's always a learning experience, and. God, at my age, anything you can learn is a bonus, right? Well, anyway, I am grateful to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Those of you listening here on the Head On Radio Network, at the Guy James site, on iTunes, wherever you happen to be tuning in, thank you for joining us. And just want to mention a few things that I happened to see on the news yesterday. I have to admit, I had a tear in my eye, and I know how the people on the right feel about Ted Kennedy, and I, frankly, don't give a damn what they think about Ted Kennedy. I think Ted Kennedy, warts and all, has been one of the greatest statesmen, one of the greatest senators that we've had in the history of this country, a man who comes from a very wealthy family, but a man who understood from day one, from the day he got in office, what his job was, and that was to fight for the working man and woman in this country, and he has done so for decades now. And I'm very proud of his political career. I'm very proud of what he has stood for in the Senate. I'm proud of him. I've met Ted Kennedy on several occasions. I find him to be a warm and engaging man, not a bit of hubris in him. He is loved by most of his fellow senators, And, of course, we have the right-wing media that's been after him ever since he was a young man. But they can all go to hell, as far as I'm concerned. Ted Kennedy is an icon in the United States Senate. And seeing him throw out that ball yesterday at Fenway, knowing that he's got terrible brain cancer, just tugged at my heartstrings. And I know, and we all know, that Ted's getting up there. He won't be with us a long time yet, but I want him to know, and I want everybody to know, that I, for one, appreciate the efforts he has made in the United States Senate for the American working men and women. I haven't always agreed with everything he's done. I don't agree with anybody in Congress or Washington 100% of the time. But he has been a tireless worker for the working man and woman in this country, and there's damn few other ones that can make that claim, and especially for as long as he's done it. A man, like I said, born into wealth, and that did not affect him. He's always been able to see the plight of the working man and woman in this country and go to battle for him. And I'm not the only one that appreciates his efforts, and we're a better country for it. A much better country for having Ted Kennedy in the United States Senate. So seeing him with his Red Sox jacket on yesterday in Fenway Park throwing out the opening ball, it was nice. It was very touching to me and to everybody, I think, that saw it and appreciates Ted Kennedy in a big way. How soon, speaking of the United States senators, how soon do you think we'll have a second senator, a junior senator, from the state of Minnesota? Amy Klobuchar is the senior senator there now, and I think she will be joined. I don't think Senator Kyle and those on the Republican side are going to get their way. I don't think, and God, I hope, that the Coleman-Franken mess isn't tied up in the courts for years and years and years. I see Al Franken, and as you know, I've mentioned on this program, Al Franken certainly was not my choice for the Democrats to put up as United States Senate. But he won with the coalition that we have with Bernie Sanders and Joe Lieberman. That would make 60. And they'll do anything to avoid that, and I understand why they're trying to keep it. I don't think it's good, but I see where the Republicans are going with this. But I believe that Al Franken will be seated sooner rather than later. And sooner or later, the Coleman people are going to have to recognize that they got beat. It was a close race. It was a dead heat. I think the vote is up to 312 positive now for Al Franken. And all the counting that can be done has been done. And it's time for the loser, and that would be Norman Coleman. It's time for him to throw in the towel and do what's best for the state of Minnesota and do what's best for the country and have the state of Minnesota be represented by two senators instead of one. I know Klobuchar's office right now is being swamped. They're being overwhelmed. They're having to do the work of two United States Senate offices, and her office will be better off, the United States Senate will be better off, and the country and the state of Minnesota will be better off when they finally seat Al Franken. Give it up, boys. The party's over. You can drag this out through court if you want to, but you will lose. The die was cast yesterday when these extra votes have gone to Al Franken. Tough. You fought the fight. You lost. Be a man. Man up, Norm Coleman. Man up and admit you lost. And just too damn bad. Speaking of Minnesota, I, as you know, I throw stones at the state of South Carolina a lot because of what goes on down there. Their politics in South Carolina, it's a laugh. It really is, if it weren't so damn sad. But you have to wonder what's going on in Minnesota. Electing the likes of Michelle Bachmann, and we'll talk about her a little more during the program. her and Jesse. Man, I'll tell you, they've been through it up in the state of Minnesota. They have been through it, and it's a great state, the state of Minnesota. God, the state of Hubert Humphrey, one of my favorite statesmen, and so you have to wonder that with a former Democratic Party and everything, you have to wonder what's going on in the state of Minnesota when they'll put somebody like Michelle Bachmann in office. The woman is, without question, her actions and her words in the House of Representatives, representing the people of Minnesota. Well, the woman's nuts. Let's just say it like it is, and let's just put it in layman's term. She is, she is just a disgrace. She's not just a disgrace to the people of Minnesota and to the people that she supposedly represents. And my God, I hope she's not representing the views of the people in her district and some of the things she says she can't be. People in Minnesota are thoughtful, good, stoic, hardworking people by and large. And yes, they've got political differences back and forth between Republicans and Democrats. I understand that. But basically, the people in Minnesota are sensible. And basically, they're you know, got their noses to the grindstone and know what good old-fashioned work is and good old-fashioned work ethics and family values and real family values and all that. So I do hope and pray that Michelle Bachmann does not represent any sort of a good percentage of the people in her district with her radical, crazy, crazy thoughts and words. And we will speak more about her later on. But she's a disgrace to the United States Congress. If I had my way, and if I lived in Minnesota, if I lived in her district, I'd find a way to try and get that woman impeached. Recalled, impeached, whatever you call it. But get her the hell out of the United States Congress and have her not only stop embarrassing the people of Minnesota, but embarrassing the people of the United States every time she gets on TV and opens her trap. And speaking of politicians, as long as I'm on the subject, and I'll be on the subject for a little while today, have you noticed that the former Alaskan senator, now former criminal, Ted Stevens, is now being portrayed in the media, my God, by Chris Matthews the other night even, as an angel? Yes. While I don't know all the jots and tittles and every little detail of the case under which he was prosecuted, and I understand there was prosecutorial mismanagement, I understand that, and I understand our new attorney general has discovered that and put things right, I guess, if you want to use that word, in legal terms. That doesn't mean that Ted Stevens is an angel. Now, let's face the fact here that the state of Alaska, politically, is a cesspool. With a senator like Stevens, with a congressman like Young, and a governor like Sarah Palin, it is a political cesspool. And for the media to now to all of a sudden, since this guy got off on, I don't want to say he got off on a technicality. I want to be completely fair here. But we all know that the way the laws are written, it's really hard to prosecute a politician. A lot harder to prosecute a politician than it is to prosecute you or I, you and me. And so the idea that the press is trying to get across right now, and it's amazing to me how back and forth the people in the media go. They go with the wind, don't they? Whichever it's blowing, whatever way the current is taking the boat, that's the way they go. They were excoriating Ted Stevens not so long ago, every single day. They knew what the evidence was. They knew what the prosecutors were doing. And they were on the let's kick the hell out of Ted Stevens bandwagon. And now Oh, my, what a grave injustice was done to Ted Stevens. So it's funny to watch the media swing both ways on this. I, for one, will be fair as I can be and say maybe Ted Stevens isn't guilty of this particular crime in the way that the prosecutors prosecuted him. Maybe they were unfair to him in some way, but to come across now that Ted Stevens is some sort of a political angel is preposterous, absolutely preposterous. Their congressman up there, Young, was here not 3 miles from where I'm sitting right now, trying to make deals, yes, in Florida, trying to make deals with local developers to put an interchange on Interstate 75 and get financial backing, which he did, from local developers here, so that they put an interchange on Interstate 75 so that land where this interchange is going to be owned by these developers that contributed to Young's campaign would all of a sudden be worth a big, big number. So Alaskan politics is filthy. You've got the likes of Stevens. You got the likes of Young. You have got the likes of Sarah Palin as their governor. what more can I say about the state of Alaska? And it just seems odd to me that Alaska, the home of the corrupt politics, led by Sarah Palin and Congressman Young, and former senator, thank God for that. They're trying to get Begich to resign and have a special election. That'll happen when hell freezes over. But now they think Teddy Boy is as clean as the driven snow in Alaska, and they're welcome to that opinion if they like. I'm sorry, I cannot share that opinion. If you'd like to call us on the program today, we invite you to do so. We believe we have the phone system fixed, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. And if you have one of those deals where you can use your own minutes as much as you want, 304-574-7813, 7814, or 7815. We'll take your calls. Looking more at politics right now and what goes on in the media, if you want to call it that these days, God, I hate to turn on the TV right now, some of the stuff that I'm seeing, especially, and don't get me wrong, I don't sit around and watch TV. I hardly ever watch TV, but I'll tune in to see a little bit of Fox, what they're saying about a particular issue, if I know they're going to talk about it, to see how far off the beaten path they are. I'll watch a little bit of Tweety Bird Matthews. I'll watch a little bit of Keith. I watch at least half of Rachel's show once in a while. I do like Rachel very, very much. She's without question the most well-informed, most reasonable of all the people on TV, I believe, with her program. Rachel's an odd person. She's shy. She's not into fame, and yet here she is doing this program. An extremely intelligent woman, and I'm happy that we have her representing liberal views on TV. I really am. But I hear these wingnut lies from the right, and I just have to shake my head and wonder, do they know that their audience is a bunch of fools? Do they just take their audience for a bunch of fools, or do they think their audience has some modicum of intelligence and they try and remake their thinking with a bunch of lies? Is that it? Or do they just take them for out-and-out fools? Because last night or the night before, I heard, for example, that they're putting out this big lie that the unemployment was 10% under Jimmy Carter's administration. 10%. It's one of those wingnut lies that just won't go away. And they claim that the unemployment under President Carter was well over 10%. I've heard several of them say that. I heard Hannity say that. It never got to 10%. In 1980, it reached a peak of 7.8. That's a long way from the claims from the right of being, quote, well over 10%. Didn't happen. I don't care how many times you say it. It did not happen. It did not reach 10%. And I'll tell you this much. I do believe that ours at the present time is most likely going to reach that. And I believe that the true figures right now probably are bordering 10% if you count all the people that are now off the rolls of those who've lost or run out of unemployment or have quit looking because there are no jobs available. We'll talk a little bit about job availability later on in the program today. But, you know, when you look at these people and you see the propaganda that they put out, I'm trying to think who it was. I believe it was Voltaire who said, whoever can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities. And, you know, you stop and look at that situation, and Bush's absurdities led us into a needless war and torture. And Michelle Bachmann, her absurdities, along with the new insane Fox News cheerleader, Glenn Beck, could well lead us into some sort of a civil war, a class war, or as recent events show, even worse. You will not be able to convince me that people like Limbaugh and Bachmann and Glenn Beck and their ilk aren't partially responsible for some of the horrible things that have taken place in this country in the past couple of weeks. You would never convince me of that. People with weak minds are very malleable. And that's exactly what these people are doing. These people are to be feared, and they're to be stopped if we can, or at least countered by people on the left. Michelle Bachmann saying that Obama is sponsoring, quote, re-education camps for kids. Re-education camps for kids. That's what Michelle Bachmann is out. She actually is going around Congress, got 30-some congressmen to sign a note that she put out about this world currency that now she's saying that Obama is trying to do. She's talking about re-education camps. The woman is a lunatic. The trouble is she gets the support of some other lunatics in the United States Congress. Evidently, I believe that maybe you ought to have some sort of an IQ or sanity test in order to get into the United States Congress, because every time I see a few of them talk, I know damn well, and you do too, that they're not dealing with a full deck. And this woman is not. And I don't want to belabor the point. It's just that she's been on the news a lot lately. She's been featured on many programs lately. Excerpts from her crazy rhetoric have been all over the place, in print and on TV and on the radio. Been on the Hannity show spewing her hatred. I believe she's dangerous. I absolutely believe she's dangerous. And we have to counter people like that. But she's talking about these re-education camps. I wonder if she also ever saw that documentary about kids being re-educated. What was the name of it? And it scared the hell out of me when I saw it. Oh, yeah, the Jesus Camp. Remember that? Remember all the fundies were behind this, and they showed about it on, I believe, on 60 Minutes or one of those programs. It showed little kids praying to a picture of George W. Bush and being taught that anyone that didn't follow Jesus was evil. That is re-education, Ms. Bachmann. And I guess she never learned anything about Liberty University either, huh? It's just a good time to remember, and those that are responsible, those who have the ears of people in this country, should remember that strong language can poison weak minds. And sooner or later, and I do believe it, sooner or later, some of this rhetoric is going, if it hasn't already, is going to lead to tragedy in this country. I do believe that. I Well, hey, before I get started on anything else, let's take a listen to somebody who literally cut Rush Limbaugh up and spit him out in little pieces yesterday. I love this caller. I wish I had his name. I'd get him on the show.
So we're going to go to Chicago. This is Charles. Charles, thank you for waiting and for calling. Great to have you here. Hello.
Thanks, Rush. Rush, listen, I voted the Republican, and I really didn't want to see Obama get in office. But, you know, Rush, you're one reason to blame for this election, for the Republicans losing. First of all, you kept harping about voting for Hillary. The second big issue was the torture issue. I'm a veteran. We're not supposed to be torturing these people. This is not Nazi Germany, Red China, or North Korea. There's other ways of interrogating people. And you kept harping about it's okay or it's not really torture. And it was just more than waterboarding. Some of these prisoners were killed under torture. And it was crazy for you to keep going on and on like Levine and Hannity and Hewitt. It's like you're all brainwashed. And my last comment is, no matter what Obama does, you will still criticize him, because I believe you're brainwashed. And I hate to say it, but I think you're a brainwashed Nazi. Anyone who could believe in torture there's got to be something wrong with them.
You know,
and I know Bush wanted to keep us safe and all of that, but we're not supposed to be torturing these people.
Charles, if anybody is admitting that they are brainwashed, it would be you.
No, Rush, I don't think so.
You said at the beginning of your phone call that you didn't want Obama in there, but
that's
you
right.
voted for him because of me.
I didn't vote for him. I voted for McCain. I voted Republican.
Oh, so
I
you're saying Republican. I turned people off.
You turned people off with all this vote for Hillary and all this BS.
That was Operation Chaos. That was to keep the chaos. That was in the Democrat primary.
It didn't work, and now all we have with you, Hannity, Levine, and Hewitt, sour grapes. That's all we have. And believe me, I'm more to the right than I am to the left.
Oh, of course you are.
I am.
Of course you are. You wouldn't be calling here with all these sour grapes if you were.
I'm so tired of listening to you go on and on with this.
I don't know of anybody who died from torture. I do not ever.
We are not forced to torture people.
I do not.
You remember World War II, the Nazis, the Nuremberg trials? You remember the Nuremberg trials?
Charles.
Cross Barbie?
Charles, let me tell you. Barack Obama.
What's the matter with you? You never even served in the military.
Barack Obama.
I served in the Marine Corps and the Army.
Charles. Barack Obama is president of the United States today because of stupid, ignorant people who think like you do. You and your ignorance are the most expensive commodity this country has. You think you know everything. You don't know diddly squat. You call me a Nazi. You call me somebody who supports torture. And you want credibility on this program? You know, you're just plain embarrassing and ludicrous. But it doesn't surprise me that you're the kind of Republican that our last candidate attracted. Because you're no Republican at all, based on what the hell you've said here.
We'll be right back.
Oh, man, how'd you like to have seen Limbaugh's face when that guy called him a Nazi? You know, the only better thing is, and that's the first time I've heard Limbaugh get his ass handed to him on a platter in a long time. And it's not like I listen every day. Maybe it happens regularly. I don't know. I wouldn't think so. But you can just sit here and imagine Limbaugh's face being turning beet red when he heard that. The only thing the guy should have thrown in, he should have thrown in about him being a drug junkie. I would have. I couldn't have missed that. Could not have missed that opportunity as long as the Russia was letting him go and letting him totally humiliate. I'll tell you what, I don't think I've ever had it handed to me like that on a program. But Limbaugh's a strange being. He's very antisocial. Odd, don't you think, that he's been married and divorced three times? Not that that's all that unusual, but have you heard a word from any of his ex-wives? They've all been paid handsomely, evidently, and not a word about Mr. Limbaugh ever gets out. We do know about his proclivity for drugs. We know that. We know about his duplicity. We know about his we know about his trip to, where was it, the Dominican Republic. So we know a bit about Rush Limbaugh, and what we do know about him personally isn't exactly what I would want to have out about me personally. I can say that, and it surprises me so very much that a man with his ethics, his morals, and his background is the god of the Republican Party. It surprises me. The fundies having such a huge influence on the Republican Party, it really does surprise me that they hadn't disassociated themselves with him a long, long time ago. But then again, it's one of those things, every time you bring it up, well, he's just an entertainer, you know, he's just an entertainer. Somebody sent me an email today and asked me, somebody on the right, a guy, I listen to your program, I've heard you talk many times about what is wrong on Wall Street and what is wrong with bankers and what big mistakes they've made. What would you do to solve the problem? I'll tell you one thing I would do. And if I were the President of the United States, I would do what I could do to get this done. I believe that one of the biggest problems that we have had in this country for a long, long time, and if we are, in fact, a Christian nation, as so many people like to say, that one of the biggest problems we've had is out-of-control usury. I don't think there's any question, and we see that again now, where they're trying to get this payday lenders law, trying to get it changed where they can hold the interest down to only like 391% a year. Who would consider such a thing, except that a lot of politicians have been bought and paid for by these payday lending companies, who, by the way, if you don't think they had any clout, the numbers of TV commercials they run with, you know, oh, we're your nice little friendly local payday loan company, and we borrow responsibly, and we're nice, and it shows just regular people saying, you know, we're like family people, and we just want to give you a loan, and we just want to help you if your paycheck didn't stretch far enough this time. They're a bunch of damn thieves. There's no other way to put it. They are thieves. Usury. Usury goes back a long, long time. And if in fact, as I mentioned, this is a Christian nation, then I would think somebody would want to honor this pledge to get rid of outrageous usury. I know the banks have to stay in business, and I know people that invest money have to stay in business. But do the banks have to build ivory palaces, ivory towers to themselves? Do they have to build these huge monuments of marble and granite and all that to store money and say, no, they don't have to? Some say, well, that gives us a sense of confidence in them. It doesn't do anything for me. When I go in and see a big building like that, especially today, after we've had the collapse of many banks and financial institutions in this country, when I go in and see these marble and granite buildings and the you know, all the brass and all that around, I think, my God, how foolish these people are, how they're foolishly wasting the money of their investors and the shareholders and the people who do business with them, that they're charging outrageous fees so that they can build these sorts of things, so that they can pay themselves exorbitant salaries and bonuses and make off with our money. If I could do one thing to change all this, and something that I think would benefit our economy, would help the working people of this country, and would stabilize the economy in this country, I believe that lenders should be forced to negotiate right here and now. All lenders should be forced to negotiate everything that's on the books right now. Yes, some people are going to take a beating. Let's take the beating and get it over with. But they should be forced to negotiate. I don't know how we'd get this done, but it's my idea. I'd be trying to think about how to effectively convert mortgages nationwide into 15, 20, or 30-year debt at, say, no more than 3%. You can make money on 3%. You just don't have to make enough where you pay the people at the top millions and hundreds of millions of dollars in bonuses. So if there's one thing that could help get this country going again, is to renegotiate mortgages all across this country into 20 or 30 year debt at 3%. I was asked, that's my idea. It can be done. There's no reason why it cannot be done. The only reason it wouldn't be done, or probably won't be done, is because those who buy the politicians will, well, they won't go for it. They need their tens of millions of dollars in bonuses every year. They need the private jet aircraft. They need the, what was it, $3 million offices. They need that. I think about these things, where we're at economically right now, and I'm starting to believe that the people in the country are in complete denial of the realities that are overtaking our American experience right now. And those realities include the fact that we can't possibly return to the easy credit and no money down consumer economy that we had before this bubble, no matter how many of our dollars get stuffed into the pockets of banks too big to fail. And as Treasury Secretary Ginther's underling, Stephanie Cutter, said last week, and I pulled out this quote from her, she said, our singular focus is on increasing lending to support economic recovery. Everything we do to stabilize the financial system is done with that goal in mind. Well, that plays right into what I said about the usury. We have got to get rates that are affordable to people. And lending on the scale that became normal over the last decade is for sure, in my opinion, it's the one thing that we will not recover. We turn around in 2009 to find ourselves a very much poorer nation than we thought we were a year ago, especially among that broad range of formerly, and I say formerly and I'm not kidding, middle-class wage earners who prospered and lived very well until very recently. And evidently the public just can't process this reality, or they don't want to. Either case is dangerous. Everything that we're doing right now is engineered to avoid reality. I believe we're trying to sustain the unsustainable. We're trying to recover the unrecoverable. When the mandate of reality forces us, compels us to face our losses in order to move on to the next chapter in American life, we've got to accept it and we've got to move on. And the next chapter is going to be a society that runs on a much more local and a much more modest scale. And whether we like it or not, it's going to be centered on some essential activities. We're gonna look back to activities in this country that helped us grow and helped us get to where we are. You know, essential activities like growing food where you can, requiring a little bit harder physical work. In other words, the opposite of a society that lost the abstraction of believing in gathering wealth by sitting on your ass, which is how most of the wealth in this country, 68% of it, as I mentioned the other day, 68% of the wealth gained in the last few years in this country has been gained by people in the financial institution. They gathered their wealth by sitting on their ass instead of working, collecting interest. And I think we've set in motion a couple of forces that are pretty certain to bring us a lot of grief. It's just time to back off, to take a step back, and all of us back off. You know, the chain stores, the Xboxes, the flat screen TVs, the Happy Meals. We're just monetizing our debt. We're just making it worse all the time. And I worry that we're wanting so much. We're all looking for this economy to recover. And thank God a lot of us have confidence that it will. I don't think it's going to as soon as a lot of people think it will. But I do have confidence that it will recover. But I also know in my heart, and I think a lot of people have to accept the fact that I don't believe for the good of this country that we want things to go back the way they were before this bubble burst. I don't think we want to go back to this life living on credit cards. I don't think we want to go back to people buying homes that they can't afford. I don't think we want to go back to people speculating. Let me tell you a quick story of where I live, and I don't want to get real personal about it, but let me tell you a quick story about where I live. Where I live in Southwest Florida, as you all know, is one of the hardest hit places with property values. I mean, property values have plummeted. We had several years ago actually people knocking on our doors, letting people know in the association where I live, if anybody has one of the units for sale, let us know because we'll buy it right now for X amount of dollars. Well, let me tell you, that X amount of dollars now is less than half of what it was then. So they built a new condo association to the east and to the west of where I live. And they put these new condos on the market for $239,000. Within 3 months, they were $339,000. I know a woman that bought six of them at $339,000. Six. The greed was rampant. People were coming to Southwest Florida from the west coast of Florida and other places in Florida to invest in real estate here because the market was white hot. They would buy these for $339,000, and surely in a few months they could sell them for $400,000 or so and walk off with a fortune. Well, that's where the bubble burst. That's when the bubble burst. And now, the person that bought those six units in those condo buildings is being foreclosed upon, trying to sell them for $169,000. half of what they paid for them. Tried to sell them for half. Couldn't. Now they're being foreclosed upon. And they've got renters moving in and out. Just people coming and going, multi-families living, and have dragged down the property values even more in the entire neighborhood. That's the kind of thing that the unbridled greed, that's what happened in this country at that time. And it's a damn shame because it led to the downfall of the market where I live and where a lot of people live in this country. It's just greed. And that's what I'm trying to explain, that be careful what you wish for. To go back to the good old days of 2006 or 2007, even part of it, is not practical. It's not practical. It was an unsustainable economy, built on greed, built on corruption, obviously, built on these credit default swaps and all the other instruments used in Washington, D.C. An economy, the size of the economy here in the United States, cannot go on that way. It just can't. It was inevitable that it would fail. And a lot of people I knew, that was all the talk where I live, and I know some other places as well around the country. Isn't this great? Well, yes, it was great to talk about it, that a home you bought 10, 12 years ago was now worth three or four times what you paid for it. That just doesn't happen in the real world, does it? And that's the one thing people didn't realize. That does not happen in the real world. It happened in this world of greed. It happened in this world of lenders lending money to anybody that could breathe. It happened, and we're seeing trials now in our area, people being convicted of fraud, lending fraud, being brought to trial for making up loans for people that didn't even exist, or making up loans for people and churning in data on them that didn't exist, false incomes, false jobs. It's not unique to where I live. But it's just one example that I know about, that I saw the greed. I saw the greed on a lot of people's faces during those times. And it was not good. Oh, it sounded good at the time. It sounded so good. Man, we're all getting rich. Think of that bank account everybody's got sitting in their homes. Why, we can just sell our homes anytime we want to and have enough money to retire. Well, it didn't work out that way, and now those homes are worth... a lot of people are upside down in a home that they bought. I feel bad for people. I know people that paid, you know, pretty decent money during that bubble for homes that now they're so upside down in that they're struggling mightily to make the payments on it. And eventually, if things stay the way they are, some people struggling mightily, losing their jobs because of the economy couldn't afford a decent house payment anyway, let alone some of the exorbitant prices they're having to pay. So everybody took their cut. Some of the greedy investors took their cut and ran. The banks, the mortgage brokers, the people on Wall Street, the investment houses, everybody took their cut. And now it's time to pay the piper. And you know who is going to pay the piper. Not going to be paid by those people who took their cut and ran. No, 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 no. They will not pay the piper. You will pay the piper. I will pay the piper. And the people working in this country and paying their taxes and living the average normal life, we are the ones that'll pay for the damage that's been done. Isn't that the way it always goes? Of course it is. We'll talk more about this. I want to get started on another issue, but we'll talk more about it when we come back from the break at the top of the hour. And I'm not too sure about our news today. The network is having all sorts of problems, so we'll see what happens. But I worry about inflation starting to. You know, we haven't even addressed that yet. We're going to print a lot of money for these bailouts. We already have printed a lot of money for these bailouts, and inflation hasn't been an issue yet. It will be. We've had deflation so far, but inflation, mark my word, you can't print money like we've been printing money, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't. I'm not smart enough to run this economy by myself, and I'm not going to say that we shouldn't. But we will not print the kind of money that we need to bail ourselves out of this situation if that works and not pay a price, an inflationary price, down the road. It won't happen. I think there's a timetable somewhere from 6 to 18 months down the road before creation of new money for nothing, when it finally filters through the system, it's going to overcome even the mass bankruptcy that's going to take place. And I do believe that it's going to start expressing itself in the sinking value of dollars and the revved up velocity of the circulation of these newly printed dollars in pursuit of anything, tangible commodities. And we're already seeing the first twinges of it in the upcreep of oil. It's busting through the $50 barrel, and it's staying that way. The price of gasoline is starting to go up. And since scarcity, as you all know, it tends to express itself in volatility in the market, which we sure learned that lesson in the last couple of years in the oil market. It's easy to imagine oil prices rising very fast once again, maybe up to that $147 barrel record level that we had last year. And if that happens, some of the most basic premises of everyday life in our country are going to be called into question. I mean, stop and think about it. If you think car sales have been bad lately, with oil in the, you know, $45, $47, $50 a barrel most of the winter and the spring, and the newly unemployed going to be marooned in their subdivision, they're not going to be out buying GMC Yukons on 48-month no-interest installment contracts. They're not going to be buying Xboxes on their Visa cards. They might get very, very hungry, though. And they might, you might see all bets are off as to how these social classes might organize themselves to alleviate their hunger and also express their anger about it. We'll talk about that in the second hour. So I wonder, I believe the president is going along for the moment with a consensus of wishes to prop up life as we know it at all costs. He's bent upon doing that. I don't know if it's right or wrong. That's not what I'm trying to express here. This consensus emanates from the top down and the bottom up, and believe me, the millions of Joe the plumbers out there don't want to rethink the terms of existence any more than the lords of Goldman Sachs. But I think circumstances are going to force President Obama's hand before long, and I think he's going to go on TV sooner or later and tell the American people that things have changed way beyond the scope of what they even imagined when they pulled the levers last fall and voted for an uncharted future. And so this temporary bull market that we're having right now, which we'll talk about again in the second hour, it may all be a fantasy, and I believe it is. We shall see. I think that sometime after Memorial Day, I think this recovery is going to fizzle out, and I think things are going to come off the track. I really do. I'd like to know what you think in the second hour. I really would. We're going to stop for news coming up here at the top of the hour. We're at least going to have a news blast of some kind. I don't know that our news network is functioning properly today, so we'll be back. Don't you go away. You're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
Earlier this week, Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Blankfein was speaking to a group in Washington, D.C., the Council of Institutional Investors, where he talked about how much pay Wall Streeters deserve from their firms. At this meeting, a couple of protesters got up and held up signs and jumped up and started asking the Goldman Sachs CEO some impertinent questions, or maybe some relevant questions, depending on your point of view. But I was wondering, what about security and class warfare in the United States? How come there isn't even more outrage? And what about the actual safety of some of these executives? Yes, it's true that there were some house hunts of AIG executives in Connecticut. But for the most part, Americans, while they seem to be ticked off, pissed off, and generally outraged by CEO and executive pay, Wall Street excess scandals, and I want my money back kind of stuff, basically, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of violence in this country directed towards those individuals, and I say thank God for that. Compare that to Europe, of course, where we just had the G20 meetings and there was blood in the streets in London, and there's all sorts of other instances of violence perpetrated against CEOs and other executives. Very different here in the United States, and I think that's true for a couple reasons. Number one, really, the United States is perceived both internally and externally as a land of opportunity, so people aren't so much upset at rich people. They want to become rich. In Europe, there's much more of a class warfare mentality. And then, of course, there's talk radio and blogs. Here in the United States, talk radio is a perfect place for people to vent. It's real catharsis for them. Maybe they need to export talk radio to Europe. How about that? In any event, as long as Americans feel that they have an opportunity to move up the ladder, to become rich, to be able to accumulate wealth, I think that we'll be able to avoid this kind of violence that I've been talking about. Let's hope that our system continues to engender that type of success or the possibility of that type of success for all Americans.
U.S. automakers under intense scrutiny from Washington, Detroit is finally turning to electric vehicles. But with production making EVs far more expensive than their gas-fueled peers, critics wonder, is the electric car ready to come back from the dead?
Well, the vehicle I'm driving right now is a test vehicle. It's inside the body of a current generation Ford Focus. Plenty of power, the noises and the sounds are different, but the experience was very much like just driving a car, except it's got an electric motor and you have to plug it in at night.
So explain the technology. You have to plug it in for how long? What's the setup?
Well, to get a full charge on a normal outlet, anywhere from like 8 to 12 hours, but that's if you completely drain the battery dry, which most people aren't going to do on most nights. Let's say most folks drive 30 to 40 miles in an average day. The thing could be recharged in 3-4 hours. Of course, that's a lot longer than it takes to fill a gas tank up with gasoline, which you can do in a few minutes. So you are going to be a little warier with this car of running out of power than you would be with other cars. So it might not be the full deal car that can do everything for everybody, but for most folks on most days, it's going to do everything they need to do.
Now, how much is this kind of car going to cost us?
They're not even close to having pricing on something like this yet, but the idea is to keep it affordable. A big focus, no pun intended, with this car was to keep it inexpensive. The technology was actually done by an outside contractor that actually called Magna, a supplier company, that actually had done work on a car like this and approached Ford and said, would you guys be interested in using something like this? And of course, Ford said, absolutely. We'll pay you for the technology and you can sell it to other companies if you want to, as long as it's a good car and it drives the way that our customers expect a Ford Focus or that type of car to drive.
Electricity, we believe, is going to make a big difference in our future of transportation. We're working very hard to come up with very pragmatic, very real products and a growth plan that has the chance of supporting that kind of objective.
How invested is Ford able to be considering the problems that are happening in Detroit?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Ford's in a very different place mm-hmm. than some of our competitors. We have a viability business plan going forward. We have not requested any loans or things like that from the government. Fundamentally, the most important element is by having this technology and being competitive in this space, we'll not only create jobs, we're going to retain a lot of jobs mm-hmm. and capability here that we are at risk of losing.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors...
It's the least you can do.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly! Do you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, America's first and only real liberal radio network. So glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Stay tuned for other great programming coming up after this program. We'll have Mark on at 5 o'clock, and then Bob, and then John a little later on. So if you're going to get good liberal programming, informative, intelligent, educated, all evening long here on the Head On Radio Network. You know, talking about crazies, starting out the program today, And I have mentioned Michelle Bachmann and Glenn Beck. It seems like his name is coming up a lot lately. I didn't know that I just got an email said today on his radio program, Radical Right-Wing Conspiracists, Glenn Beck declared that the second wave of the perfect storm had arrived, discussing a story about spies infiltrating the electricity grid. Beck quickly veered into conspiracy theory mode, declaring that foreign nationals, quote, have been dropped into position. Now, what does that mean? Did they parachute them in the middle of the night? I didn't hear the planes going over. Dropped into position, or maybe they've come across the Canadian or the Mexican border at night, unbeknownst to the Border Patrol, and got themselves in position to sabotage our electricity grid, to foment revolution in the United States, apparently using the all-powerful weapons of college courses and unions. And Beck says, if you don't think that foreign nationals that wish our country harm, that would like to see us collapse, are not right here now, the Tom Cruise of Russia, of China, of Iran, of any country. Tom Cruise? What the hell? Chavez, if you don't think that some of these Marxist revolutionary courses that are being taught out in California, the Marxist revolutionary influence in our own unions, in our own businesses, in our own, protest out in the street, if you think those are spontaneously happening by Americans, you're an idiot. Glenn Beck calling people an idiot. Glenn Beck calling people an idiot. I guess he's no idiot. He's making a lot of money. He's insisting that those people that do Mission Impossible missions are real. Beck said that such people read the newspapers right now and cry because they know what to look for in other countries. And they know these are the conditions that they would have been sent into to topple the government. He really is nuts, isn't he? And yet, and yet, oh my God. Well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? We were talking about the economy in the first hour of the program today. And by the way, you can call us if you like, 866-546-5254 or 304-574-7813. It seems to me, speaking of the economy and where we're going with it, that it does seem to me that the U.S. is doing everything possible to avoid the awful reality of our financial condition as a nation. And I know we're hearing, well, things are starting to look better. I don't believe they are. I think we have to face reality. And I believe the worst self-deception is the idea that everything just be okay if we can just restart the lending. That's all you hear. We can just get this lending restarted. That is not going to happen. We don't have the capacity to service the debt we already have. We don't have the capacity to survive on a mountain of debt and pay the interest on it. We just don't. I mean, think about it. Americans borrowed too much. And the banks, who are also responsible to see that borrowing doesn't get out of hand, went right along with it. And they made obscene fortunes in fees and bonuses, in fraudulent lending that leveraged this unpayable debt probably into the greatest collective swindle this world has ever known. And this swindle has crippled our economy. There isn't any question of that. And any further swindles they come up with are not likely to revive it. Not in my opinion. This so-called rally in stocks here that's happened in the last, what, 2-3 weeks, and in particular the financials, it might go on for another month or two. But in the meantime, the banks are trying to desperately to avoid calling in more bad loans, especially in highly leveraged commercial real estate in malls and strip malls and the big box centers, because they don't want any more losses on their balance sheets. And the problem is they can only avoid this for so long. Sooner or later, and you know this, sooner or later the chickens are coming home to roost, and any credibility, even in the basic transaction of business, lose their legitimacy, and something's got to give. It can't go on the way it has. And I think they'll be able to hold off the coming catastrophe for another month or so, maybe. But sometime this year, according to all the indications I see and the people I've talked to that have a handle on what's happening around the world, probably sooner than later, they'll have to begin wholesale liquidations of everything under the sun. And you're going to see this happen. Companies, restaurant companies, I see. You know, you just wait until the season, the so-called season where I live, is over with. I'll bet you in June, and we've had a bunch of businesses close here, and we've had a bunch of restaurants, especially restaurants, because we're overbuilt. I'll bet you in June you're going to see restaurants in this area drop like flies. We're talking about some big companies that are leveraged to the hilt that are in big trouble. We're talking about companies that are in financial trouble, and they're on sitting on quicksand. Companies like Outback and Arby's and Dairy Queen and some of those who are leveraged to the hilt. They were in these huge expansion plans when the bubble burst and incurred massive debt. There's going to be tons. I read somewhere that they expect 25,000 to 30,000 restaurants to close this year. More. So there will be wholesale liquidations of everything, and it's going to be a tough one. It's going to be a very tough one. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey guys, Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hi Kevin, how are you?
Fine, and you know what? You're 100% right.
Well, I don't know about 100%. I hope mostly. Well, I
don't,
let
well,
me let me put it.
The thing
way.
Is, I hope you're wrong. But,
yeah, I hope I'm wrong
but
too.
But the thing is, that's just the cold hard reality. It's like, you know, Florida, other than Disney and NASA and a couple of defense contracts, that produces nothing now. Most of the oranges are coming from Brazil.
Hey, they make boat hoist up the road here.
Who buys that?
Not many people lately.
Okay, but name one industry where almost every man, woman, and child in America can afford that Florida produces.
Let me see here now. I'm thinking. Every man, woman, child. I'm in trouble on this one. Yeah.
Exactly. And until that happens, nothing is going to happen now. But, you know, like I said, it's a house of cards.
Yeah, it is. And it was assembled not even like a good house of cards. In a very haphazard manner, and now things are starting to fall. God, I hate to predict that, but you know.
So, first of all, Florida has always counted on money from up north.
Oh yeah,
coming in, people retiring down there, and that would be the money from up north.
Absolutely,
it never built an economy based on young families who probably will consume more to begin with.
Yeah. Well, growth has trickled to almost a standstill here in Southwest Florida and Miami. You know, the mass migration of people into these areas has stopped. First of all, it's, you know, you can buy property pretty cheap now. I'll say that. But
in Miami still?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh. Wow. Yeah, but always said Miami just blew up.
I mean, you can buy property cheap there, is what I'm saying. I mean, you can buy it cheap, real cheap, half of what it was just a couple of years ago. Same way here.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So if you're thinking about coming down here and enjoying the good life, why, now's the time to do it. I don't know about the good life anymore, but.
Well, I've been there and done that, guy. Been there and done it. I'm glad to be where I'm at. You know, and that's the thing. You know, they need infrastructure. They need. First of all, Florida should have a light rail going from Tallahassee to the Keys.
Oh, absolutely.
And all points with.
Absolutely, easily done too. With the terrain we have here and all, very easily done.
No excuse why they're building 20-lane highways.
No.
That, and you know how many. That are tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of people that were employed right there.
Oh yeah, and you're absolutely right. And the will the, and we'll make everybody else here go to sleep talking just about Florida. But and the way they build roads here, first of all, it takes them longer to build them, and God only knows why, because it's the easiest place to build roads there that God ever created. Secondly, when they make a road bigger, like Interstate 75, when they made it to it's four lanes, naturally, and they decided to add to it, did they add and make it eight while they're at it? No. They made it six lanes, and then they'll wait a couple years, and then they'll make it eight. They always do it the dumbest way, the most expensive way.
Yeah, well, that's all the political lobbying and graft, you know. But it's just, the thing is, they're not building infrastructure that will generate jobs.
No, they're not. And be helpful. You know, we actually had on the ballot and had passed here several years ago a light rail plan. And it would be a wonderful thing, running from Miami over here to the West Coast, up through the middle of Florida, my leg running over to Tampa area, to Orlando, to Jacksonville, another one over to Tallahassee. I mean, it only makes sense, but it's not going to happen now, and it's certainly not going to happen now. And now, you know, it's not going to happen. And it's there's nothing like light rail. I mean, that's just the answer to so much.
So many problems.
And when you think back when this country was still in its infancy and they decided to build the Transcontinental Railroad, you think of the foresight and the fortitude of those people, knowing that what a big deal that was going to be for the country, and it was. Here we're talking about how we have the technology and we have the need now for light rail. And we haven't had the fortitude nor the guts to do it, and it's ridiculous.
Well, the thing is, you know, rail. Anything rail, light rail means commonwealth, and it's too many working people having wealth.
Yeah, and
it's a great equalizer. You know, New York City subway system: millionaires and the bums out on the street take the subway.
Exactly.
Great equalizer.
Yeah, it is.
It resolves a lot of problems.
It sure does. It sure does.
My MetroCard has resolved a lot of problems, because when I was living in Florida, half my problem was getting to and from.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Especially when gas was going $5 down.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean, my friend. But, you know, I look at the... And they dropped that light rail plan here a year or so ago.
Well, because of Bush.
Yeah. Yep.
Hopefully Christie will.
Never know what Charlie's going to do. He's fairly unpredictable, I must say. And I'm going out on a limb when I say this. For a Republican, old Charlie's not been all that bad. He's done a lot of things I don't agree with, but... For a Republican, I say he's probably one of the least offensive Republicans I've run across, if I can put it that way.
Well, the thing is, Florida's a swing state.
Yep.
So he has to be. He's trapped in that corner. You know, he can't be too right-wing, because Florida is not Mississippi.
That's true.
Thank God.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure.
You know, Miami sees to it that it's not Mississippi. The whole southeast then sees to it.
Yeah, well, and Naples, Florida. I wonder how many of our listeners have been to Naples, Florida, and been there's an area in Naples called Port Royal.
Oh yeah, I've been there.
That'll knock your eyeballs out. I know you hear a lot about Palm Beach. Well, Port Royal doesn't have to hang their heads over anything over Palm Beach.
Well, the thing is, Palm Beach is older than Port Royal. Port Royal, you see the planes fly in, private jets just fly in all the time.
Oh, on Friday afternoon, the airport in Naples is full of private jets. They're just one after another, and they get in their limos or their Ferraris or whatever, the Lamborghinis, and drive down to their palatial mansions in Port Royal. It's just it's an incredibly, incredibly wealthy area. It's just something to see. It really is.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the guest houses there are way bigger than what I live in, you know. But lots of money there. Hey, Kevin, good to hear from you. How are things in New York today? Is it cold there?
Yeah, it is.
It's cold here. It got down into the 50s last night. It was like, I don't know, in the 70s today for a high. So we're having some cool weather. And I think maybe this is our last blast of winter. And of course, Easter coming up here this week. And by the way, we hope for a nice Passover for everybody that's listening. Passover, I believe, begins at sundown this evening. And then we have the Christian Easter this Sunday, so very holy season for a lot of people. Kevin, thanks for calling. It's really good to hear from you, as always. And
always good to hear from you, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, bye now.
Okay, bye.
That was our friend Kevin from New York. Always good to know what's going on in New York, I'll tell you. New York. I love New York. I never thought I'd want to live in New York. Oh, I'd live in New York if I could live in one of those palaces around Park Avenue someplace. I mean, who wouldn't? And in one of those high rises, that'd be fun for a while. Bernie Madoff, what's his name? Madoff. He lived in one of those big. He didn't live in Trump Tower, but you know, maybe one of those Trump Tower mansions. So that'd be kind of nice. For a little while, look down on all the people walking down below. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. We were speaking about how I think that we maybe have a worldwide financial catastrophe coming, and I think it will get started sometime in the next month or two in earnest. There are going to be liquidations of things, of households and chattels and U.S. Treasury paper, all kinds. And then we're going to find out. And then we're going to find out the truth if our nation's economy can be sustained based on families selling the contents of his garage to the family next door. And I'm saying our standard of living for the masses is about to take a drastic fall. And I truly hope I'm wrong. But all the indicators are pointing in that direction. And among the regular folks, there's been very little talk of the fallout from the anger and the disappointment all this is likely to ignite like it has in Europe. And I think it's going to be severe. And some people are already getting ready for it. No doubt you've heard about the new darling of the right, Glenn Beck, calling for the formation of new militias, and gun sales are out of sight, and people are stocking up on ammo to the point that there's a shortage of it. And I believe that one mistake that the banking elite and their lawyer friends have made in the past decade was their public flaunting of their immense wealth. We've all seen it rubbed in our faces. Houses especially, and there a lot of them are in easy to get to places where anybody can see them. For instance, an angry mob in one of the wealthier communities, Fairfield County, Connecticut, or maybe East Hampton, New York, or Naples, Florida. The executives of Citibank and Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan and a long list of hedge fund managers. You know, these guys, if that comes to fruition, are going to be found cringing in their wine cellars behind some sort of a measly privacy fence when the Glenn Beck and his newfound friends come to visit them. And all of this, I think, could be avoided if someone in authority like U.S. Attorney Eric Holder, if he would take an aggressive interest, and so far I don't see any of this happening. I mean, all this crap about the senator in Alaska, as if that was, I mean, yeah, it was important, but he needs to get aggressive and look into these multiple swindles of the past decade that have taken place on Wall Street and all across this country by the financial community, and get started as some serious prosecutions. And there's very little of this going on. There's hardly any of this going on. And I believe that the window of opportunity for this sort of action may close sooner than the government and the mainstream media believe. I mean, if this continues and nobody ends up being accountable for the theft of the wealth of America and putting it into the pockets of a few. There's going to be problems. And I don't have to tell anybody that social phase change, as in the formation of mobs, is nothing to screw around with. The first time that we have a situation like that, the first window that's broken, all bets are off for any kind of social stability if that sort of thing ever gets started in this country. And my guess is that the various bailout gifts to the bankers are long past having gone too far in the eyes of this, really, face it, increasingly flammable public. And we don't have any previous experience with this type of social unrest that I'm talking about here. The violence of, you know, we look back to the Vietnam era and some of the violence that took place there. That's going to look really limited and reasonable in comparison, in the sense that it was an uprising on the grounds of principle, not survival. And the Civil War was it was a regimented affair between, you might as well say, two rival factions. This time, people with very little interest in principle beyond some dim idea of economic fairness would, they're going to be hoisting their torches out of sheer grievance and malice and anger. And by the time the Wall Street elite sees the torches flickering through their hedges, it's going to be too late. It's just going to be too late to defend the honor of their Ferraris and their cappuccino machines. President Obama is going to have to starkly change his current game plan if this outcome is going to be avoided. I think he's capable of turning off the mob. I think he's capable of preventing a Glenn Beck and his friends from acting, but it's going to take something extraordinary to do it. And it's probably going to take the nationalization of the big banks, despite the screaming from the right. And it's going to take maybe engineering the exit of Ben Bernanke from the Federal Reserve. And it's going to take sucking up the embarrassment of having to replace Tim Geithner in the Treasury Department. And he's going to have to call out the dogs on the swindlers who had the gall to play their country and its people for suckers. And as I've said before, the standard of living in this nation has got to come down. It's going to come down, whether we like it or not. We've mortgaged our future, and the future is staring us in the face right now. And it's going to be tough to swallow. But the American public won't accept the reality of this as long as the fat cats continue to enjoy the high life at the working man's expense. It's happened for too long. It's not going to be able to continue this way because something nasty is going to happen in this country if it does. There's going to be a movement take place that none of us wants to see. They've got to be brought down hard. They've got to be disgraced, and they've got to be humiliated in the courts. And they've certainly got to be parted from some of their fortunes. That would only be right. And they can talk about wealth redistribution and all they want, about all of us wanting a piece of the pie. No, all we want is a fair piece. All we want is the piece that we're entitled to, the piece that we earn. And I don't mean entitled. I mean the piece that we earn. We're entitled to the piece that we earn. So, I think Obama pretty much served notice to this last week when he told that delegation of bankers in the White House that the only thing standing between them and the pitchforks was him. I think it's possible he does understand the situation. And like I said, I could be wrong. I hope I am. But there, if all this happens, if we end up with the inflation that we predict, if we end up with the banks having a lot more toxic assets on their books, and asking for more bailout and more, sooner or later the public is going to crack. Who would blame them? I just hope it doesn't go out of hand. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Ah, yes, listen to what the man says. Listen to what the man says. That's what they say anyway. We've been listening to what the man says a little bit too much. And we've got a caller on the line right now, I believe. Who we got?
Hello.
Hi.
Guy.
Yes.
I finally got through.
All right. Yeah.
Hey, how are you, my friend?
Well, good. We're good. We're glad that we've got the phone. I have to figure out a way to let people who call on this particular new phone system we have know that they're hooked up. All they have to do is wait until the break's over or something.
A little bit of music in the background. I figured I had maybe a little bit of sound coming from your end. And well, let's give it a shot.
Yeah.
I just wanted to contact you and let you know, you know, yesterday... You had such a beautiful rant going there about Ed Schultz. The thing is, we're sitting in a country that's been so bamboozled. The people have been put to sleep by years of continual propaganda. They don't. The news, I think it was the early 80s when the news started to change and we started to lose the real reporters, you know, the real journalists and the in-depth, investigative reporters were minimalized and pushed out of the mix. And reporting went to, what would you call it, just this constant groan from the right. And it continued on, and it seemed like after Clinton became president, it got worse. And they had, whomever... are the powers that be, because I don't know if it's either party guy. I know that right-wing Republicans have this mantra that they keep spouting, and they keep coming from with the same inane and inept ideas, and they keep going back to the same old playbook, if you want to call it that. The words that Newt Gingrich came up with, if you can take and twist the language, we stopped being a party of democratic individuals, a part of the Democratic Party. They changed us to Democrats or Democrat, you know?
Yeah.
With the emphasis on the word rat.
Yeah, they did.
They did it over and over and over. And then they took the word liberal and they twisted it to a point where it became something almost evil. But if you take the word and look at it for what it's really worth, guys, the word liberal, when I have a bowl of ice cream with nuts and chocolate sauce on it, I want a liberal helping. Don't give me one of them little conservative ones. Give me a liberal helping of ice cream.
Yep.
That's probably why I'm in the shape I'm in right now.
you got a proclivity for ice cream like I do? could you eat ice cream any time of the day?
Oh, just about, guy. Just about. I could eat it for breakfast.
Several times a day, perhaps?
Well, I used to, but my doctor's cut me down to, you know, I...
No. Forget the doctor. Leave him out of this. If you had your druthers, and what's your favorite kind of ice cream?
Vanilla with peaches.
Okay, so you got vanilla with some fresh peaches, and you can have all you want. It's sitting there in the freezer. How much ice cream would you eat every day, and how many times?
Well, to be honest with you, I still have the love of it, I guess it was from deprivation as a child. You know, we didn't. Ice cream was a very seldom treat. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, maybe Saturday night if you went uptown or something. You know, you got a nickel for an ice cream cone. Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'd go shopping on the weekend, and they would go into town, and you know, mom would get us all cleaned up, so we could go, and they'd have a. They had this thing at the community that I grew up in. It was I don't know what. It was outside the courthouse, and it was a bandstand kind of a thing, like gazebo like.
Mm-hmm.
It was large enough for the old time fiddlers to get together, and they would get together every Friday night, and the whole town would gather. It was like I don't know, almost like a fair, but it wasn't. It was, you know, and, us kids would just run around and play and listen to the music, and it was a community spirit. We used to have these porches on our houses, and people would come by, and you'd be sitting out there in the evening, and they'd come by, and they'd stop, and they'd on the road going by the farm, and they would come on up and they'd chat. They were neighbors, you know.
Yeah, you didn't have to make an appointment to go to somebody's house. You went by, you saw them sitting on the porch. You knew doggone well you're welcome to stop and chat a while.
Yeah.
It's not like it is now where you call it up and say, "Hey, you're going to be home on Saturday night and have to make an appointment." Neighbors were neighbors.
That's the truth, and we knew who they were. And
sure.
They knew us, and we just, you know, and their kids were our friends. We just went to school together, and we'd work together in the summer, helping out each other on the farms and doing things together as a community. But, you know, those memories are long gone. You know.
But, Gunny, that's socialistic.
No, that's
socialistic. Working together.
American as apple pie guy.
Working together, my God.
So don't you tell me that the United States wasn't a socialistic country because we used to help each other.
From day one. The day the pilgrims landed.
When the pilgrims landed, they worked together to build their community. So don't go back.
Yeah.
You were trying to get me excited, weren't you? But see, that has been stolen. Our history has been twisted, and we've been cheated. And people don't realize. They have no concept of community. We talk on the Internet with people. Our community is so widespread. The people that I chat with in the chat room, they become very special people to me. And I talk to a talk show host way down there in Florida, and I'm up here in the middle of the continent, not the middle of the nation, the middle of the North American continent.
That's right.
Exactly center. And I talk to people across the globe that have more in common with me than my neighbors do.
Sure.
Now that is what this new technology has done for us, guys.
Yeah, never.
It's separated us by thousands of miles, but it's also put together something that I think is so beautiful. I really do. You know what that is? The community of this reawakening, an idea that, wait a minute, we've been lied to for so long that people are starting to open their eyes. I listened to Mike Malloy last night, and he had this clip in there, because I cannot stand that person, and I won't say the name, but it sounds something like Flush and,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and he got a call or two that laid it out, and I couldn't believe it.
We played a. You mean that clip of that guy letting him have it? I played that on the show earlier today.
I didn't get in.
Yeah, that guy roasted his behind for him.
I was My jaw dropped down to my chest. I was dead. I could have caught flies.
Yeah, I know.
I said, finally, somebody, one of their own, because the guy said he was a conservative. He voted for McCain.
Right.
And he was a Republican. And he laid it out. And I thought, it's about time. They're starting to wake up, too. We've always been awake to this guy. We've been, you know, we've listened to this drivel for so long, and we've ranted about it. We've screamed back and forth at each other, so our voices are just hoarse.
I know.
You know, you run up against them, you talk to them, and they just, when you start trying to explain your position and referencing not only points of view, but we usually reference where we get our information from, and then its reliability is judged by the character and the source of that reliability. And then we weigh it as liberals. We don't say, well, gee, just because Joe Schmo says this, I believe it. I'll take viewpoints. People will have their ideas. And if they can give me a reference, a place where I can go and look it up for myself to verify the information, and then once I know that they have given me factual information, I'll stand beside them and scream it.
Sure. And once you have the chance to sift through everything and evaluate it and find out about the credibility, of course. But to just to, have somebody like me come on and say, hey, this is going to happen. This happened yesterday. Take my word for it. No, that doesn't work.
Right.
Hey, can I ask you a technical question here for a second? Are you on a remote phone?
I'm on one of those, what do you call them, cordless.
Okay.
And does it sound funny or something?
Yeah, we're getting a little feedback, and I just wondered if it was me or you. And
let me switch over here to a landline. I've got.
Oh, wait, pardon us, folks. We're going to do some technical work right here now.
Hey, how's that, guys?
We still got a little bit of the hum there, but it's better.
Yes. Yeah, I got a little bit of it here, too, but see, it's... I think it's this line up here, to be honest.
Hey, you don't still have party lines up there, do you?
Nope. No, we don't. We actually have our own phone. Guy, you remember the old party line?
Oh, yeah.
Where your phone would ring, and you had a ring and a half, and then somebody else had two rings
mm-hmm.
and a half, stuff like that on the line. Well, now the phone rings in our house. It also rings at AT&T and at NSA. it doesn't matter. We're on a party line whether we want.
Yeah,
to
that's right. Instead of Hilda down the road listening to your conversation with a cloth over the mouthpiece, it's the guy at the NSA. Exactly right.
Well, they don't even need the cloth piece. They just run it through a computer.
Yeah.
Computer.
Yeah.
They just run it through there, and if you say the wrong word. Or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, the neighbor lady, she had to put something over, so you couldn't hear her breathe. But you knew somebody's always listening on your party line.
There's a buzz on the line, guy. And that's what every time the phones don't work quite right, I get that feeling.
Well, I'd like to say hello to all of our friends at the NSA. We are glad that you have listened in.
Brett.
Yes.
Agent Brett. Yeah.
Thanks.
Agent Brett. Say hello to Agent Brett. Every chat room that I go into, they got this guy who comes in as Agent Brett. it's like, I don't see him in usually it's over at Tom Hartman's chat room.
Oh, Agent Brett.
Agent Brett will come in. And he just calls himself Brett 46 or something like that. I'm not quite sure. But anyway, it all started on that because... we became aware of the fact that our phones were being tapped, not because we were subversive or that we were anti-American or that we were
thinking of doing something against this great nation that we love so much, but that we were not towing the mark for the proper authorities. Then they keep screaming this, we're not Nazis, we're not Nazis. Well, excuse me, do you know what the White Rose Society is? Do you know how it got founded, what it was about in the beginning? It was a group of anti-Nazi Nazis, you know?
Yeah.
They didn't have a choice. They were conscripted into service, and even one of the founders of that wonderful group of young German people that stood in a nation full of cowed people, you know, they took the initiative and tried to make a difference. They paid with their lives. Well, we're not quite that bad yet.
No, but we've got to be vigilant that we don't get to that point, because we just have to make sure. Gunny, I'm up against the clock here. Thanks so much for calling. It's good to hear from you. And
thank you, and God bless you, and just keep on keeping on, guy.
Well,
I appreciate you so much. And, you know, your voice, when you came back on the air, I just did backflips. Well, I can't do them, but in my mind, I can.
All right, because I was wanting you to send me a picture of the backflips and all, but okay. Gunny, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you.
Yep.
And be safe, my friend.
All right. Bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah. from the Wild West. Good to hear from Gunny Bob. I guess we don't have time for any more calls today. Guys, I don't know where the time has gone today. I had an important email from somebody today that I was going to read, and I never got around to it. And we will discuss it tomorrow. Very definitely. We want to get into the subject tomorrow of the gun shows and the gun nuts and some of the things, the very scary things that are taking place around the country along those lines. I find it rather disconcerting, and I think you will as well. A lot of you keep up on that, I'm sure. But some of the things are taking place around the country with the militias and the neo-Nazi groups and the white supremacists and just plain old good old boys who love their guns and don't want to give them up under any circumstances, and no one's asking them to. The people that have got this fear in their hearts, we're going to talk about this tomorrow, that some of the radicalization that is taking place. And, you know, some of these people with weak minds, as I mentioned before, some of these people with weak minds are very malleable in the right hands. And, you know, people like Hitler knew what to do with people with weak minds. People like Mussolini knew what to do with people with weak minds. A lot of people know what to do with people. Rush Limbaugh knows what to do with people with weak minds. He deals with them every day. We don't deal with those kinds of people on this program. We don't have to. Our audience is smarter than that. Hey, thanks so much for listening to the program today. It means a lot to me that you're there, and we hope we've given you an informative program today. As something we always try and do, and we very, very much appreciate your listenership. So stay with us, and we'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned for Mark and then Bob and then John. Great programming coming up all evening long here on the Head On Radio Network. You're listening to the Guy James Show in the Head On Radio Network, and don't forget, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.